Здравствуйте, дорогие друзья, это «Анатомия стартапа», меня зовут Эльнора Розмут, и сегодня мы в полевых условиях работаем на международном венчурном форуме, который проходит второй раз здесь, в Алматы. И, конечно, это уникальная возможность собрать спикеров международного уровня с уникальной экспертизой, чтобы исследовать тему стартапов и венчурных инвестиций. И именно поэтому я хочу представить нашего первого гостя. So let me introduce our first guest. It is Jonathan Chang, which came from... Where are you from, Jonathan?
Singapore.
Singapore, yeah. Yes. It's your first time here in Kazakhstan.
It is my first time and exciting.
Do you like it?
Yes, so far. So I'm looking forward to explore the city a little bit more. But the scenery around here is beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's a first point where you came. It's so great to start your communication with Kazakhstan and, of course, with our ecosystem, which is dedicated to startups and investors.
Yes.
What do you think about the market in the whole, like in general?
Well, I think the market of Central Asia and specifically Kazakhstan is really thriving, especially for us coming from Southeast Asia. Because recently our president, so the Singapore president came over here with huge delegation of business people. So certainly, I think from the G2G perspective, there is a strong relationship already. But from a market perspective, this is a really, really good market for both sides. It's not just Southeast Asian startups or companies coming here, but I hope can also attract a lot of investments coming to the region.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Singapore is the best role model for the whole world, how IT technologies and other directions develops. And I think you can give us this experience, yes, and this lesson maybe. So I know that you are experienced educated to education sphere, yes. You also, can you tell a little bit more about your professional experience in the sphere of IT technologies and education?
Yes, thank you so much for asking that question. So I would say if I have to describe my work experiences, they come from four different segments. The first one is startups, technology companies. So I founded and co-founded five tech companies across multiple sectors. Two in Silicon Valley, two in New York City, and then one in Indonesia. And then also coming from the education background, as you said, so I led research centers conducting research. I teach entrepreneurship and innovation. That is the second part. And then the third part is more on the social impact as well and how we look at the things that we do, how it's going to contribute to the betterment of the community. And last but not least is an intersection of business and government. So I spend time at Google and Shopify and now at a fintech company, but I also advise a number of governments around the world over these years.
Interesting. And what is the role like of this communicator, yeah, between government and business segment, especially startups? Is it difficult? What changes you faced with?
So this is the way I would say it. It is always an advantage for both sides, the public sector and the private sector, to really understand where each side is coming from. Unfortunately, people tend to have a misperception of each sector. Either they have bad experiences or they don't even have any experience, but they have their own misperception of the sector. So where I'm going with this is that both sectors need each other. A policymaker can have one of the best policy out there, but it needs the private sector to help them execute it on the ground. And it needs the private sector to create jobs, to spur innovation, and to attract foreign direct investments and so forth. And on the other side, the business people, we also need people in the public sector to support through regulatory making it easy for people to do business, making it easy to have cross-border trades and transactions. And for instance, in the fintech sector, we'll just use that as an example. This is a really, really good sector to show that why the collaboration between the two sectors is so important, because financial sector is one of the most regulated sectors in any country. So again, we need both sides to come into an agreement that what is good for the market, what is good for the people, then it's good for everybody.
Yeah. And if we start to talk about financial sector, mm-hmm. is it enough to invest in startups, whether it's government help or investors, or there's something more than money?
Can you expand a little bit when you say there's something more than money? What are you referring to?
International experience, or when you have some practice from other countries and you integrate it into ecosystem of one particular country.
Yeah. So I would say a little bit of everything. The reason is because fintech sector or financial sector, they tend to be quite local. Because as I said, it is one of the most regulated sectors out there in any country. So the understanding of the local market is very important. And plus, usually, again, I'm not familiar fully with how Kazakhstan is run, but even in a country like Singapore, Indonesia, or many other countries in Southeast Asia, you do need to have a local ownership on certain things and the data privacy, where the data is stored and how you have to comply with a number of regulations that is designed to protect the consumers in the local market. So that's why I said the local understanding is important. Having said that, the second part of the word fintech, right, technology, means it can be also accessible, and it should be accessible by a lot of the broader community of people. And that could also doing a cross-border trade. And that is where the experience in conducting businesses in other markets is also very important. So that's what I said. It's a little bit of both.
Yes.
Local context, but also having, if it's not regional, certainly global context.
Yeah. And let's go back again to your experience and talk a little bit about Shopify, e-commerce. I think it was startup now,
yep.
and now it's a huge business.
Yes, it's a publicly listed company, yes.
Yeah. And can you share your experience of different stages at this company?
Yes. So I was when I was at Shopify, I was built their regional government relations. So as I said, government sort of doing business and with government is one of the things that I've been doing, and it is important because at that time, Shopify was working with different governments to receive grants to support small business. SMEs, small medium enterprises, and this is around the time where it's around 2021, where we had the pandemic, so there are a lot of small businesses that were suffering, and economically, and then the governments are trying to help to provide grants, and then there's where e-commerce comes in because a lot of people doing shopping at home.
Yeah.
And how are we going to support that through a technology deployment? And of course, the government comes in with providing the funding for the SMEs.
You couldn't do it without the help of the government, yes?
That's right.
How many years it took to develop the habit of people to consume online?
Ooh, that is a really good question. But I would say it has been done for quite some time. I think even as far as the smartphones, I would say the invention or the access to mobile phones and smartphones, it really opens up this whole e-commerce platform because people can access certain websites online. They get used to the idea of spending things online. I think that really opened the doors for many, many e-commerce to start selling online. Having said that, the pandemic, I know pandemic is really is one of the darkest time in our civilization, yeah. But having said that, it also accelerated the transformation amongst digital transformation in many sectors, especially e-commerce, because people were just shopping online,
yeah.
Right? You cannot get out. There was a lot of lockdown and so forth. So I would say the acceleration comes around the pandemic time.
Yeah. And what is the situation now in Singapore among startups? What are the trends and investors? Which directions they choose?
So the minister, the Kazakhstan minister just now mentioned about AI and about this technology. I couldn't agree more. And that has been going on in around the world, certainly in Southeast Asia as well. You can see that the emergence of AI as a tool to support either e-commerce or fintech or any sectors, even the education sector as well, we see that. So that is one of the new trends. And the second one is around edtech. This is not, it's been going on for quite some time. And again, the pandemic accelerated the need of connectivity, infrastructure, and the digital platform so people can study, they can learn, and they can interact with one another. The third is healthcare. Again, it's because of the pandemic, people really realize the importance of having the right healthcare system and access to healthcare, especially in the remote areas, in smaller cities even. So this is as part of the investments that we see. And last but not least is fintech. Yeah. I happen to be in fintech, so I'm obviously maybe slightly biased on this one, but I really see a lot of investment made in the financial technology sector. And even here, when I was walking around looking at the startup alley, I see a number of companies doing either e-payment or e-wallet and sort of contactless payment and sort of transferring money and so forth. I think this is exciting. Yeah.
Fintech is actually one of the high-speed developing sphere here at Kazakhstan because we have online mobile apps and we used to take them everywhere. And if we compare with other countries at CIS, of course, Kazakhstan is one of highly fintech developed country.
Yes. And I may say this, although I just arrived last night, but up until today, I don't even need to have any cash everywhere I go. I just use my phone, with the digital payment, just tap and go. So I see it already as a new visitor on how developed that is.
And how do you think, what is the next stage of fintech development here at Kazakhstan or maybe around CIS countries?
Yes. Perhaps this is something that, again, not knowing a lot of the different agreements that amongst the CIS countries, but I can share something that I seen in Southeast Asia amongst the ASEAN countries. So the ASEAN is similar to the CIS for Southeast Asian countries. We're starting to see a collaboration amongst the, first of all, with G2G, allowing a cross-border payment. So if somebody from Singapore travels to Indonesia, or travels to Malaysia or Thailand, they can scan a QR code in the local market and then, you know, they can make the transaction. And we see that also vice versa, from China to Singapore to, different countries, Malaysia to Singapore. So I would say I would like to see that. Perhaps that makes it a lot easier for movement of people, goods and services. They don't have to think about currency converters. They don't need to bring cash or they don't need to withdraw local currencies. Everything can be done through their mobile app. They can scan a QR code and it's done. And it can be done hopefully in a safely manner. And I think that would be something that would be exciting.
Yeah, and it's a good stage to develop local tourism among those countries.
That's right,
Region.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, thank you. And you talk about before MedTech. Here at Kazakhstan, we have some difficulties with regulations on the government level in order to start this highly developing MedTech startups because it's difficult to understand how you can provide good quality service for the people in rural area through the internet. What is the situation with it in Singapore?
Singapore, fortunately, I mean, it's a small city state.
Yes.
So there isn't so much about the rural areas. But let me talk a little bit about more in a country like Indonesia or even the Philippines or Vietnam, where it is a bit more spread out. So you are correct. It is quite difficult when it comes to medtech. The investment upfront can be high. And then also the infrastructure on how you can have people have access to this. So I would say this is really the need for cross collaboration. So I would say it's not just the government, it's not just the policymakers, but you might even have to collaborate with the telecom industry, the telecommunication, because they the one that providing the either the 4G or the 5G or even 3G in some places on how people can access to that. And then the second one is the banking institution, right? How is payments going to be made in these rural areas? Is it through a cashless payment or is it through hard, you know, sort of the paper-based cash? That can also be done. And last but not least, of course, from the regulatory perspective, usually they care about the data privacy. Because if we talk about medtech, we talk about healthcare, there's a lot of sensitive information on somebody, right? It could be what kind of illnesses they have, what type of medication they've been taking or they're about to take. This type of information needs to be kept safely. And I think this is, you know, you don't want this information to get leaked out or get hacked and things like that. And that would scare some people, will scare a lot of people away. So these type of things that I would say the regulatory sometimes will take their time. It's not completely without merit because these things happen.
Yeah, and maybe we need some years for practice and maybe even mistakes. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. And the global topic of this forum is AI. Yes, we use it already. ChatGPT.
Yes.
Came to every sphere. We at our internet media also use it. And what is the situation again with AI at your region, and how do you think how it can maybe improve startups and help investors?
So let me say this first. I know a lot of criticism about AI out there, especially
and the quality.
The quality about ChatGPT and things like that. I'm actually one of the people that I don't think. Technology is technology. It really depends on how we use it and how we can take advantage of it. And of course, there is always a negative side of something. But then out of that, it really also, you know, the innovation that comes out of it, right? So I would say it is exciting. So first of all, for those that maybe if you didn't get the chance, even the opening sequence of this conference was in an AI kind of welcoming. It was really nice, fits with the theme. Again, it makes it technology more accessible to people and it certainly allows people to get information easily. And it can certainly can help in some sectors as well. For instance, even the education sector. I know that a lot of people criticize about students using ChatGPT and so forth. But I would say that it's just another tool for people to use.
If you have analytical skills, you can use any tool and make it better.
Exactly, and I think that's what you said here. I just wanted to highlight a little bit. If you said if you have analytical skill, you can use the tool. I think that is so important. Then the added value of us that is even more important, right? Because if the AI can do the job for everybody, then we need to raise above that to make sure that we have an added value to take whatever the AI has produced to make it even better. And I think that is the key point here.
And this is how to win this maybe future war with robots, to control them, to be higher.
Yeah.
And to predict it now, yes?
Yes. Look, I may, to give a small example, right? Let's say if students listening out there and they are using the EdTech solution and they're submitting their essays or homework using ChatGPT, I would say that if you do that, then you are in the losing end, right? Because what you are submitting is an average work. Matter of fact, it's probably common work. So you need to take that and really up your skill and to add, as you said, added value and things like that so that it can have a unique voice, which is your voice. I think at the end of the day, each individual human, you and I, we have our own unique way of doing things. We have our own unique mind, our unique contribution. Don't let it go away just because a robot can do it for us.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Thank you. And if we talk about the future, how do you think, is there a chance for unicorn to settle in Kazakhstan? Mm. Can we have this, our unicorn in future, and which sphere again, yes?
Never say never. I strongly believe that any market with the right type of exposure, the right type of ecosystem, the type of investors that are patient, that is nurturing, that is not just looking for a short-term return, and also having the regulatory support, I really strongly believe that that market can have unicorns, right? Especially in this type of age. And you know, if you look at even many markets, like Indonesia, I'll just take one example, neighbors to Singapore, maybe 10 years or 15 years ago, they didn't have any unicorns and they didn't have even a thriving startup ecosystem, but now they have multiple unicorns, right? So again, it comes back to the investment that the people are willing to make with the support of the private sector and then the public sector. So yeah. I'm very bullish about this.
Okay. And during this year, I was a year ago here at a forum, and now we have some experience, yes, and time passed. And I analyzed that we have like two or three plus invest funds more. Yes. Our investors who just started a year ago now have many cases. And what you can advise for investors in case of education or self-development or even the maybe right way of investment, what they should do, because it's very, very new profession and no one know where to study and they, make it together, yeah.
Yeah. From what I've seen in other markets, developing markets, one is you need to be patient. I said it earlier, but I wanted to stress it again. To all of the investors out there, for a market that is still developing, you cannot see a return very quickly. This is not Silicon Valley, right? This is not New York City. This is not London. So again, when you invest, you actually also take a certain type of level of risks because things might not pan out so easily, but it's okay. It is part of our commitment to make it better, right? If everybody's only looking for short-term investments, then no new markets can come out, right? Let's be real. So we do have to do that. That's one. The second one is really understand the uniqueness of the local market. Don't forget that as well, because I've seen it in other markets. A lot of these global companies, they come into a market, they bring their new knowledge. Let's say they bring their knowledge from Silicon Valley or from China or anywhere, and then they expect somehow the local market can behave or will behave exactly identical as their previous market. That is a wrong assumption, right? You need to adapt it. You need to really understand how the local people are, their purchasing behaviors and so forth, so that the idea, it can be from another company, but it has a local context. It has a local feel. That is very important. And last but not least, the resources, not just what I don't just talk about money, but I also talk about the human capital is so important. We need to nurture them either from high school, middle school, all the way to the college. And then even maybe there are some people that decided to leave the country for lack of opportunities before. We should attract them back. We should say, hey, come back to Kazakhstan, right? Look at all of these people coming here. Why are you still, doing business in another country? Come back, invest in Kazakhstan and ecosystem.
We can support.
Exactly. And then that's how it is. It has to be a collective effort.
Okay. Jonathan, you are from the sphere of education. You're as a professor. So let's imagine that we meet in 25 years in the future.
All right.
How do you think what will be around us? What will the future world look like?
Let me say this. I would say, again, from my time just here, I would say the future will be bright. I'm excited about being here for the first time, and I'm excited to come back here in 25 years. I would say, I imagine at that time, we're going to be surrounded by a lot of young people with bright ideas, and they're talking about the ideas not because they learn it from other countries, it's because they already have role models in Kazakhstan. They're growing up, they know the names, they know the stories, and these people will be their role models, and they'll be their idols, not somebody else from another country. And I'm excited about that. And also even within the education system, so the students will be learning about the success stories, but also failures. We should learn from both, but from local companies, local startups, local unicorns, and how they made it, how they grow, how they go to different markets, and how they conquer the world.
Okay, thank you so much for your energy, for your advices. I'm sure that many people gonna listen our podcast. So guys, you can listen our podcast at Spotify, Yandex Podcast, Apple, and of course, watch our YouTube video. Also, you can state your questions. My name is Elnora Rozmut. I am CEO of Yersin Media, and it was Jonathan Chang who specially came from Singapore. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.